our Monday catch-up, the wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock, right now, I reckon. Crash, welcome.
G'day, Jared. Gosh, what a week we've got in store for us this week. And the Ryder Cup on Saturday might just beat it all. I mean, it's just one of those beautiful events you love sitting back watching under a doona. Isn't it magnificent? Yeah.
The Brownlow, did it capture you at all, Ollie Wine's victory?
Well, it did, Jared, for this reason, that since last year when Kerry O'Keefe made that statement that 7 Brownlow medalists in a row have come from country towns without a McDonald's. Now, see, that was taken a bit too far because it's not quite true. But I get the essence of his point, Jared, in that, you know, you've got a guy like Nat Fyfe from Lake Grace, population 500, or Dangerfield from Box Creek, population 100. What he was saying, I think, was that small town boys just get out in the backyard and hardwire their skills. So I was looking, with no emotional investment, I thought, I wonder whether the theory will be continued. And, of course, Ollie Wines is from Echuca. Now, you can't say that Echuca hasn't got a McDonald's, but the theory of... Do you agree with it? I sort of get it. You know, that the kids who grew up, you know, like... you know, kicking a footy round in a backyard in the local park, or, you know, Lockie Neal, you know, using the hallway in his farm in Adelaide to kick goals and pretend he's Port Adelaide. And I just think that the country boys win again.
It's wonderfully romantic, and it is a picture of an older time, isn't it? It's a bit of a throwback to how sport was for growing up.
Well, I still think that the guys that do sport best at the top level, even in rugby league now, are the guys that don't think because they've played at 100 games. I watched the kid Daly Cherry Evans from Manly on the weekend. He grew up in a giant backyard in Mackay where, you know, you'd get he'd chip kick and score a try which bounced off the rear vision mirror. And it was the last generation before phones, really,
yep.
And before kids turned to phones. And I still think that theory of the wide open spaces and, you know, kids hardwiring through 10,000 games of backyard footy, that if you come from the bush, you got a bit of a better chance. And when I saw Ollie Wines and I looked it up and I thought, you know what? O'Keefe might have just done it again.
He can fool you, Kerry, can't he? You can take him lighthearted, but there's always a pearl in there.
Well, it is, and it's a good point too. And look, in rugby league, they're struggling for playmakers now. And one of the reasons is kids aren't getting that exposure in the backyards. They're playing with phones and they're not getting those hardwired skills where they just, as I said, don't even think about it. They just do it because they've done it. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting point.
So, Crash, we have a beautiful Melbourne Grand Final and it's being played in Perth. The fact that it's the Bulldogs and the Demons, which I think is just a dream matchup, but it's not Sydney versus the Bulldogs. It doesn't have one of the big non-Victorian teams in. Can these things be too Melbourne, or will it still capture the parts of the country that are just theatre goers at this time of year?
Oh, yes, it has, Jared. And that's the thing. I think that this, and that's why I'm glad that rugby league, when we spoke last week, there was going to be a clash of the prelim final involving the Storm. And 2 hours later, they changed it, didn't they? I'm so glad they did because the romance of this grand final stretches beyond Melbourne, even though it is Melbourne, because long-suffering Melbourne supporters are everywhere. Here's an example, as recently as an hour ago. I was at the gym in Brisbane and know a guy who's a Melbourne fan. I said, "You're so Melbourne, aren't you?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "Well, my kids were born." I said to him, "If you don't bag for Melbourne, there's no Santa Claus." No Christmas presents. And that's it's the generational thing, isn't it?
Yep.
I think, you know, Bob Murphy, through his deeds, you know, even just on with Andy in the afternoon, lovely little following of him and the Bulldogs around Australia. And, of course, I know he's gone to Frio now, but it's there. This is there's a lot of emotional investment in this grand final for people who aren't actually emotionally invested in it, if you know what I mean.
What's your gym routine, Crash?
Well, instead of pumping weights, I pump chicken bones, Jared. I'm not a strong man. Geez, I'm like, mate, I tell you what, you've got to do more as you get older. I'm telling myself that, but it's battling time, racing the clock.
Yeah.
On a cricket front, at dramatic international events with New Zealand's the 11th hour withdrawal from the tour of Pakistan, which has caused ructions. Totally understandable on one level, but a huge setback on another. How does it sit with you?
Well, look, we should never underestimate the scars that stay with New Zealand after the Karachi bombing nearly 20 years ago now. I think it was 2001 when Stephen Fleming's side, when a bomb went off outside the hotel. I mean, that scarred New Zealand. And their security firm now, Reg Dickerson from Australia, he's a Queenslander, he is really sensitised to the entire environment of the subcontinent. He's been going there for 30 years. He doesn't overplay things, Jared, and he doesn't underplay things. Yep. He knows when a threat is a threat. So when that bomb threat came through, he knew it was a serious thing. And the significant thing is Reg is also the man who advises England, who have got a test tour coming up in Pakistan as well. So, wow, it's a quantum leap to go from advising one country to abandon their tour to then sanctioning another. So that England tour is in grave doubt. I so felt for Pakistan because, you know, players like Usman Khawaja went over there and, you know, they did the Pakistan Champions League in the 2020 and they were just starting to get moving. It was match morning for the first one dayer. But here's the thing, Jared, it's a reminder to cricket that in the last month we have had, you know, two games, international games, cancelled on match morning. And so there's no such thing as a certainty. I could say to you now the Ashes are a stone cold certainty and I could be right up until 9 o'clock on match morning and something may happen. You know, there could be a positive test. You never know.
For Pakistan, so they'll never be, it will be very unlikely that they'll get to a point that this couldn't happen. Like you couldn't get the advice that could cause a tour to be called out, given the volatility of that country and that part of the world. If they were, so I noticed that one of the first suggestions, well, Australia's tour next year should go back to the UAE. If that happens again, what are the chances long-term of Pakistan being able to regularly play cricket at home? And they've done a phenomenal job to survive, I think, transplanted in the way that they have. And it just felt like they were coming out of it. But if this is an ever-present threat, what hope for Pakistan cricket for a generation?
It's a huge worry. I mean, they've survived with basically no cricket at home for 12 years. Since Lahore bombing. And that's... You imagine it, Jared, if we sit here now and said there would not be another international game of cricket in Australia until the year 2033.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the equivalent of what they went through. Like, it would devastate our entire cricket scene. They say over there that in the laneways of Lahore and that, they play these beautiful games with tape tennis balls where these little mesmeric leg spinners come in. They play under lights. They're still in action. You know, the game, you know, social media has helped it. Kids watching heroes on YouTube, but there's nothing like, you know, that old saying, you can't be what you can't see. And seeing in the flesh is so much more powerful than seeing on television. So they're worried about it. They really are. It's devastating for them. I mean, they've signed up Matthew Hayden as a coach for the T20 World Cup next month, which would be terrific. And Vernon Philander, you know, they were just sort of taking shape and bringing guys in. But I think the man who can solve so much of this, Jared, is Imran Khan. I mean, their prime minister. He's connected to everyone in Pakistan. Even the Taliban respect him, you know, and of course they're Pakistan-based. And he just, if someone can make something happen in Pakistan, it's Imran. His story is like no other that cricket's ever seen, and he has this way of being able to make people acquiesce and somehow get deals done.
What's happening on the Afghanistan front? Well, there's many a governing body looks to the ICC to see what sort of direction will come.
Well, that's the interesting thing. We've had some trial matches leaked, and Afghanistan are going to play them. So it looks as if they will be allowed in the T20 World Cup next month. they will. I reckon they'll play under an Afghanistan flag, which is interesting. Not the Taliban flag. The cricketers over in Afghanistan are sitting waiting for the Taliban to say something, and they're saying very little. So they're going to actually take an Afghanistan flag with them, and they believe that it'll be allowed to be flown. But I'll believe it when I see it, because these things can change in a heartbeat. But look, it's a tricky one, Jared, and there's a lot of sympathy out there for Afghanistan's women who are saying privately, we want the men to play so that it helps us, you know. So I understand the 25 women who have got Afghanistan contracts are still being paid, and I know there's various board members for Cricket Australia who, and to their credit, are looking on the other side of the argument, saying, we basically said this test can't play because of the way Afghanistan's women are being treated. We won't play the men in November. But let's have a look. Let's try and understand their cricket over there to see what is the best choice.
Do you think there's a chance that test still goes ahead?
No, I don't, because if they sanctioned it, I think the federal government would stop it. I think they would say no. No way, not with the Taliban in charge. But, you know, is there any middle ground where they can help Afghanistan and the cricketers over there? Because, you know, it's not their fault their country was invaded.
Michael Holding's departure from the world of cricket commentary, his retirement, what a figure he's been.
Oh, yeah, Jared. I could talk about him for an hour. So many stories about him, but I just... You know, he was always just different from everyone else. You know, the story about when he was signed by Kerry Packer and had the little black bank book at age 22 and went to the Jamaican bank checking for his $25,000 to go in. He was most unworldly when he started, but then became a figure who was not just for racial equality, but just a really smart guy. Like, he solved Bob Woolmer's death. When Woolmer died during the World Cup, it was Holding who went to the Pegasus Hotel in Jamaica, where he's from, spoke to the ladies who cleaned the room, reenacted what happened to Woolmer, and worked out that he could have only died of natural causes because they found him leaning against a door in a bathroom. And they said if he was murdered in there, the murderer would have had to open the door to get out, and Bob couldn't have been found slumped against it. So that's a little story, but there's a million of them for Mikey. He's hated Carl Hooper, the West Indian cricket captain. Refused to commentate. He said to the broadcasters, if you put Hooper captain of this team, I am out of the series. So Hooper would go in, Holding would stand down. Hooper would go in the next series, Holding said, nah, not interested. I mean, just a man of principle. God, he stood for something, Jared.
That is a remarkable part of the story. And then his rain delay work in England, where he articulated fully the Black Lives Matter in a sporting context, I think, that perhaps had only been experienced in America prior to that, is those stints of, they weren't quite commentary, were they? But those, his way of being able to articulate the history of it, his personal experience of it, and what they were aspiring towards, that will stand as some of the great sports commentary of all time.
Oh, and Jared, it came from the tips of soles of his shoes upwards, didn't it? Like, it was so much a part of him. It's almost as if he'd been rehearsing it for 20 years, but he'd never rehearsed it at all. And even little anecdotes, like, you know, his one about, he said, did you know a black man invented the light bulb? It wasn't Thomas Edison. He did it in unison. And like, he pulled a lot of facts from which were so literally enlightening, pardon the pun. But that, and then wrote a book, of course, about it. And I just think that's his greatest legacy. And it came in the last year of his career. But he'll really be missed. He was gun barrel straight, not parochial at all. I remember when they played 51 minutes of a test at his home ground in Jamaica against England before abandoning it because the wicket was falling apart. On the first morning, everyone thought that Michael Holding, who was raised a couple of kilometres down the road, would stick up for his home ground. And he walked out in the middle and said, this is a disgrace. The people who prepared this wicket, I'm sorry, have to be accountable. It's a complete and utter embarrassment. And I thought, that's Michael Holding.
Yeah.
A man without fear or favour.
Crash, there's a few ructions within Indian cricket right now. So Virat Kohli is going to depart the T20 captaincy beyond the World Cup. Are there a few rumblings around Ravi Shastri?
Yeah, well, with Ravi announcing over the weekend that he will resign as Indian coach after the T20 World Cup as well, which is really significant. And he just said, look, I don't want to overstay my welcome. I did what I want to do. And he went out, and Jared, I know you like Ravi too.
Yeah.
He's so cavalier, isn't he? Like, he gave a damn-busting interview with The Guardian where he said things like, these bilateral white ball series between countries, get rid of them, just play tournaments. And he said, we beat Australia in white ball cricket. I can't remember a ball of it. We beat in New Zealand in white ball cricket. I can't remember a ball of it. We beat Australia in a test series. I remember every single delivery. You know what I mean? And, yep. And said it with real pomp and authority. You know, the game will miss him because he's such a showman. You know, loved the Australian way, heavily influenced by Ian Chappell, and modelled India's entire game plan on Australian cricket of the 1970s, as in, right, let's get a bit aggressive. Let's give it to these guys, you know. So Kohli is his Ian Chappell, if you know what I mean.
So he came to the job mid-2019. So this strikes me as a really interesting case study around even the, and he's been phenomenally successful in the role, about how long you should be the coach of a national team. Is there a bit of a lesson here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you burn brightly and you burn briefly and then you go home. And I think, Jared, there's a tendency to compare cricket coaching with sort of football coaching, where you're sleeping in your own bed 95% of the time. These guys are on the road for hundreds of days a year. They're lonely in their hotel room. And quite often as the coach, you do become a bit isolated. I still think 4 years is tops. I know John Buchanan did it for 8 and Bob Simpson for 9 or something like that. But that's a bygone era before T20 cricket with everyone heading in different directions. In fact, if a coach who's applying for the job after Justin Langer said to me, oh, I really want to go for a long time, I'd always consider that a negative, you know? Mm. I'd prefer someone who said, let's go hard at this for 4 years. Let's really, really, I'll put my life on hold and do this because it's too hard. But Shastri was great. He got him fit. They had to meet fitness levels to get on a tour of Australia. India has never had that. He got the right diets in him. I never thought I'd see 5 Indian fast bowlers at a sushi restaurant in Adelaide the night before a test. You know, they were eating this, you know, beautiful miso soup and sushi and just really healthy stuff, just, you know. And so he made Indian cricket reset and rethink. Ravi Shastri did a great job.
Could you imagine him as coach of Australia? I'd love the idea.
Well, I think he'd get under people's skins. But I think, you know what, with that sort of approach comes progress, you know. He loved the dramatic. And I know India's players used to say to him, you must, at every press conference in Australia, get the words tracer bulletin. And so there was this lovely moment when India won the last test in Sydney. And they said, what did you think of Jasprit Bumrah? And he said, he was magnificent. At times, I swear, I was watching a tracer bullet. And then Virat Kohli just burst out laughing beside him as if to say, all right, we'll pay up for dinner.
What a great figure in cricket he is. Crash, excellent to chat on a Monday. There's a lot ahead of us, so enjoy it. We'll chat next week.
Good on you, Jared. See you then. Bye.
The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock.